Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, prison and contractions of HIV. We got AIDS and how it affects our community with Brother Jason X Lottery and Mohammed, and we also have Sister Gidget Mohammed and my brother Rakeem. What's up, guys? How's everybody doing out there?
Yes, sir, bro. Peace.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Caesar.
Walaikum salam, sister.
Well, yes, sir.
I'm going to let you guys take it away. Sister Gidget, go ahead and get us started real quick, if you don't mind.
All right. Well, assalamu alaikum, family. Brother Rakim, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
How are you?
I'm doing fine, beloved. What about yourself?
I'm blessed by Allah's grace. And how is Ramadan coming for you?
Ramadan is coming pretty good this week. Last week I had to eat because I was working with some very toxic and dangerous chemicals that did not allow me to preserve Ramadan, or shall I say, take part in Ramadan last week. But I'm up and running with Ramadan this week, and I'm gonna stick it in for this week and for the remainder of Ramadan. And I was thinking about making up for that week last week. You know, I don't think I'm going to do that, sister. I think that's going to be a little bit too hard for me to make up for a whole week that I missed. So I think I'm just going to go down and, the rescue mission or homeless shelter and just give away some clothes or something, because I got to have my damn food.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Jason.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Gidget, and assalamu alaikum to Brother Rakim, and greetings again, peace. And peace to our brother DJ Black Caesar, and Ramadan Mubarak to everyone who is observing Ramadan.
Ramadan
and,
Kareem, sir.
I pray everyone is doing well. Thank you for inviting us out again this evening. And greetings and shout out to the Blog Talk family, and also to the Facebook family, those who are listening in on the internet, those around the world listening. Thank you for spending this time with us. We always know there's other places that you could be, but we thank you for joining us for these short moments that we get a chance to get together and talk. So thank you, Sister Giz.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Brother Jason, we have missed you. You know, you've been on a little hiatus, a little vacation from nation building and from Blog Talk Radio. So it is so good to have you back at home where you belong, sir.
Well, all praise is due to Allah. You know, since the apostle has asked the brothers of the FOI to go into the highways and the byways where our people are, I've been working diligently along with brothers from the FOI in New York to try to make our word bond and be at all places at all times. And there has a lot of planning has to go into it if we're to move right, move safe, and move with love into the community. We just can't just show up. We have to do a lot of planning and a lot of pre-planning before we go out. So that's what I've been doing. And, you know, I haven't been sleeping, haven't been resting. I've been working very diligently and trying to observe my Ramadan as well. Brother Rakim, I feel you, brother. And, you know, as the Quran says, that you can make up a like number of days. So if you got to pick one day a month, and tell the rest to make up that week, brother. May Allah bless you and have a wonderful and a happy Ramadan.
Yes, sir. Same to you, brother. Praise be
yes,
to Allah.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, gentlemen, I thank you all for joining us. I thank our listening audience, our nation building family. Of course, I thank my my faithful and loving family in Nigeria and Kenya who always inboxing me and giving me praise for doing these shows. So thank you, family. Love you much. Jumbo and Kadu to you all. For those of you who did not hear our Blog Talk show on Sunday when we were talking about HIV and AIDS and, of course, what was thought to be a new sexually transmitted disease or STD, the blue waffle, we really touched deeply on how AIDS is affecting our community. And not only that, but how AIDS is actually being enhanced as a disease itself, especially in our Black community, and how it's affecting our children and our women. And I share with Brother Jason, I say, but every time I got ready to open my mouth about talking about AIDS in prison, you know, Allah would intervene and tell me no. And so now it got to the point where it was pressing on me so hard because I really didn't have a topic to really discuss all the way up until I think it was yesterday when I called you, Brother Jason. And You know, so Allah really put this on my heart to speak out tonight. And as usual, I'm going to begin with some statistics. And, you know, people, these are just statistics, but just keep in mind that, you know, there's someone or a group of people that are out there studying the progression of this disease. So even if all of the numbers are not actual facts, you know, even if a fraction of them are correct, there is a high regard to be concerned about the plight of our people and this deadly disease that is highly preventable, but we somehow continue to, you know, get exposed and become infected and contract this disease. And so I'm going to start with some of the statistics that I shared on Sunday, whereas I shared that in 2009 there were 466,829 African Americans diagnosed. In 2011, not to say those, of those same 466,000, but in 2011, 230,000 African Americans died from the complications of AIDS. And that number in particular blew me away. Now, as I further study, and I got these statistics from the CDC and from Avert.org, which I explained to you that Avert.org is a group of, they have some psychologists, they have some social workers in it. They actually go and they study the statistics in the African-American community on all levels. It's not just AIDS. They monitor education, the accessibility to health care, who is on food stamps. They do it all across the board. And based on their records in 2011, at the end of 2011, 33% of the black males that were in prison are infected or HIV positive, or either they have full-blown AIDS. Now, Brother Jason.
Yes, ma'am.
When you hear those numbers, what do you think?
Well, when I hear those numbers, and especially when it's directed toward our community, I think that there's something going on that is directed at what I've always said, the conspiracy to depopulate the black community here in North America and throughout the world. And I always say that if we have a hand in that depopulation process, then, of course, what we get is what we get. And what I mean by that is those of us who have come in contact with the disease, with the symptoms, with the plague that is known as HIV and AIDS, those have been diagnosed, we have a responsibility to inform those who are around us. We have a responsibility to take good care of ourselves first. Those of us who have been diagnosed in our community have a responsibility to organize themselves, to find out exactly what it is that they have inside of their body and how they can take the best care of themselves. I've always been one to think of this as a conspiracy, and people say that, you know, the conspiracy about it is directed towards money, but it's also bigger than that. As soon as we find that the outside community is concerned with our community, there's always a caveat. And in this case, the caveat that goes along with it is now our health is tied to an outside community that does not necessarily love us. Therefore, we need to take charge of our own health from the cradle to the grave. However it is that it is that the HIV has been contracted, we have a responsibility not to make it to spread. If we don't believe that HIV and AIDS exist, then we have the responsibility to have the research done to make sure that the word gets out that it does not exist, and what it is, we need to be able to put that out there as well.
Yes, sir. Brother Rakeem.
Yes, ma'am.
What do you think about those numbers?
Like Brother Jason said, I agree. Those numbers, it's a conspiracy. I mean, those numbers are not by any type of accident. It's not a coincidence that those numbers are so high, especially when we talk about black people. I also agree with Brother Jason when he said that AIDS, he believes that it is a conspiracy. It is a conspiracy. If you go back and look at the Strecker memorandum, which is written by Dr. Strecker, I don't know his first name, but he gives us some of the major misconceptions about AIDS that some of us have, you know, because we're not educated on AIDS. That's one thing for sure. We're not educated on AIDS. One thing about AIDS is, number one, AIDS is a man-made disease made by man, which it holds very true to Brother Jason's theory that it is a conspiracy. Number two, you know, when we was growing up, when AIDS first came into the picture, we used to look at it as a homosexual disease. Back in the day, you see gay people and gay people dying of AIDS, and most of the gay people that we saw were Europeans. So therefore, we always thought it was a gay white man disease until we found out later that we as black people were the biggest victims of AIDS. It's not a coincidence that we first started seeing this disease in gay white men, because white people have been known to get rid of their undesirables in their own society. Number one. And number three, AIDS is not a venereal disease. AIDS can be carried by mosquitoes, so I'm telling you people out there in the listening audience, if you out there, you know it's hot, and you're around damp and moist areas, you got run a lot of water, you got a swimming pool, whatever you may have that may attract mosquitoes to you, or whatever you have around you that may attract mosquitoes themselves, you need to spray on, just like I'm a painter, for example. I work in a lot of dense areas where there are mosquitoes, so I have to spray on the off with the, what's the stuff in it, Sister Gidget?
I don't know. I forgot.
It's called DEET, but I don't know. That's what I'm saying, DEET. Okay. And another thing, I want all you brothers out there, it's all right to go get a condom. If you out there experimenting, I'm not saying I condone you experimenting, but I'm saying if you are experimenting and out there tweaking from sister to sister, yes, it's good to go get a condom, but let me explain one thing to you. Condoms do not prevent AIDS. This goes against the findings of other researchers. You know what this Strecker memorandum is saying, but Dr. Strecker knows what he's talking about. There are at least 6 different AIDS viruses loose in the world. 6.
Yes, sir.
Not 1, not 2, not 3, but 6. Okay? There will never be a vaccine cure. I'm going to tell you why in a minute there will never be a vaccine cure. Number 8, the AIDS virus was introduced into Africa. Now, we wonder why so many of black people are dying. I want to go back to what I said about the undesirables of the white race, which were gay white men. They experimented on gay white men first. They experimented on their own first. And when they found out that this AIDS epidemic killed a lot of gay white men, then they brought it to us. And that's why I strongly support the theory by Brother Jason that this is a conspiracy, because this is biochemical warfare, biological warfare.
Huh.
The AIDS virus was introduced into Africa by the World Health Organization. And also, the AIDS virus can live outside of the body. Now, Dr. Strecker did say this. He said he unearthed evidence that AIDS was created in a laboratory, and this ain't no secret. When we first heard about AIDS, they first told us about a damn green monkey. Damn it, I ain't buying nothing about no damn green monkey. Ain't no green monkeys on the planet. There is no green monkey on the planet. But this AIDS was found, was created in Fort Detrick, Maryland, from smallpox and hepatitis B vaccine. It is now certain that the World Health Organization introduced this vaccine that contaminated East and Central Africa with the AIDS virus. So there's no such thing as a damn green monkey. I just want to make that clear. We do not know much about this biological chemical warfare. Not a lot about it. We do know that it is man-made, and we do know now that when you look at Africa and all the people in Africa, we didn't have no faggots running around in Africa. We didn't have no homosexual. We didn't have no green monkeys in Africa. And the children, the innocent children are dying, the mothers, the father dying of AIDS. How did this come about? How is the black community in America affected so much with this AIDS virus? It is because it is a goddamn conspiracy against the black man and black woman here in America and the world abroad, and this blue-eyed, pale-skinned beast that you call the white man, the Caucasian, or the European, he is the mastermind behind this. And so, therefore, I thank you, Sister Gidget, for coming up with the topic of tonight.
And I thank you for taking me all the way to the end of my show, but we gonna make it happen anyway, Brother Rocky.
Yes,
you
ma'am.
Touched on subjects that I wasn't ready for yet, but all praise is due to Allah, brother. I'm glad you spoke your heart, and I love your passion as always. Okay, listen, y'all, Brother Rakim got me thrown off. I also did some statistics on the U.S. population of prisoners. Now, they say that the citizenship in the U.S. or the population of the U.S. is 5% of the world. However, we hold 25% of the prisoners. And of those prisoners, 841,000 plus are African American men and women. And that's the game, you know, that's the game, you know, to imprison a once slave people. And I know Brother Jason know what I'm talking about when I talk about this new world slavery, because for those of you who don't know what goes on in prison, you got free labor that's coming from the inmates. And then you have the prison population and the senators and the governors. They're all profiting off the free labor of the inmates. And then in order for it not to be called slavery, they come up with a very minute salary to give the inmates. And I think it's like 93 cents a day or something like that, just so it won't technically be slavery. But in everything that you said, Brother Rakim, I'm going to skip past the prison game because we pretty much know what goes on with that. But what I do want to talk about, what goes on in prison, and I don't want to be too graphic, but I am going to be precise when I say that there is a promotion of sexual activity in prison. And I'm going to tell you what I mean. When you have guards that are set up in a position where they can provide favors or they can provide you accessibility to other things that you wouldn't normally be accessible to in prison, they do these things for you to maybe get like your outside family member to send you some money or whatever, and then they let you have privileges that you're not supposed to have. And one of those privileges and one of the key privileges is sex. However, only one or two prisons in the United States actually provide condoms to their inmates. Now, I got a problem with that. I got a problem with that because if prison is supposed to be a place of punishment, a place where you are deprived of certain civil liberties and privileges, then why is it, do you think, that they are allowing men to have sex with men and women to have sex with women. It's something wrong with that picture. And it's not because, you know, oh, well, you know, we feel sorry for them and we just feel like this is something they need to do. Brother Jason, why do you think they're letting this go on?
Well, sister, I would like to just backtrack just a second and invite our listeners, those who have not picked it up yet, to become familiar with Sister Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow. It's a very hot book that's been out there for at least the last year. And it is going to give us a good idea of why the prison populations have swollen and swollen to the numbers where, as you said, there are over 2 million incarcerated here in the United States, and the majority of those prisoners are black and brown. Once you're able to take hold of a particular population, I have to disagree with you on this one point, Sister Gidget, where you said prison is supposed to equal punishment. Well, the idea of prison was supposed to be rehabilitation. And in the middle of that word, rehabilitation, is the word habitat. And habitat is a place where you live. And most times if you go to a zoo, they would try to put the animal in its natural habitat. And the idea of prison is supposed to rehabilitate those who have supposedly affected a crime against society. They're supposed to go and be secluded away from that society into a place or position where they can now be remolded or reshaped back into a worthwhile citizen. But you and I know that that's not what happens there. It does become a place of punishment, Sister Gidget, and in that respect, you're absolutely right. But the idea if you just shape the mindset of the prison industrial complex to where it is towards rehabilitation, there would not be such an emphasis on sex at all. And if there was some type of sex, you would introduce the proper male-female relations that would go on once you left prison into the regular society, where inside of prison you would promote family values, you would promote courtship, you would promote things that would allow men and women to be in a supervised environment, learning proper manners. How do you interact with the female? How do you interact with the male in a civilized way? That's rehabilitation. You could have social events where, okay, it's not sex and animalistic sex going on, but it's a social setting where you could, in effect, have male and female inmates or their family members that are of the opposite sex come to these large prisons and have a nice social event where the prisoners dressed up in their fine clothes, and those who came to visit them dressed up in fine clothes. They listened to soft music. They were able to speak in soft tones to one another. They would be able to have a higher plane of existence, preparing them for the outside society, which would be an even higher plane of existence. But, of course, we all know that's not what we get from a prison industrial complex. From a prison industrial complex, what we get is a magnification of all of the ills that sent us to prison in the first place. All of the things that are wrong with society that we get to when we're in the so-called ghetto, we find them in prison, including sex, including drugs. We find it magnified to a degree that once the brother or sister is finally released back in society, you got a worse person than initially went in, whether they are innocent or guilty of the crime they were convicted of.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. I'm sorry. Am I the only one? I'm picking up some static. Caesar?
Yeah.
Do you know where that's coming from?
It has to be coming from one of your phones. Everybody else is on mute.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I hope it's not my phone.
I do have a question from someone out there. Can I ask the question now?
Yes.
Okay, 330. Go ahead and ask your question, please. Three, three, zero. You got a question or comment? Okay. Let's cut his mic back off, and we keep going. Sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry. So I just hope that answers your question, Sister Gizzard. And those who are in the Blog Talk Radio audience, please feel free to ask questions. And if, you know, if what we say in any way offends you during tonight, don't take it personal. Listen to the words that we're saying and try to research them yourself, and then come to us with a better understanding. And I submit, I know I don't know everything, but what I would like to say is the things that I have studied, I try to study it with an ear or an eye toward the betterment of our community and the betterment of the world. That's as the Honorable Minister Farrakhan teaches us.
Yes, sir.
Let me tell them something real quick, Gidget. You guys, if you have a question, all you got to do is press 1 on your keypad, and then the question mark will pop up, and I'll pick on you. So don't be scared to ask questions. That's what we're here for. So don't be scared. Just ask a question. All right, Gidget.
Okay. Yes, sir. Thank you, Caesar. And, you know, Brother Jason and Brother Rakim, you know, what I wanted to talk about how when you spoke about habitat, it kind of reminded me when I was titling this called The Life on the Inside. And so many people are unaware of the fact that this becomes a lifestyle, especially for people who have very long, extensive sentences, you know, they got 5, 10, 15, 20 years life or whatever. It becomes a life within the prison. And so, therefore, they do have to adjust to their habitat. And like I said, I'm trying not to be graphic. I want to kind of be politically correct. But you know just as well as I know, you've heard the stories. I've had brothers, friends, ex-husbands, cousins, men, you know, all kind of men in my family go to prison. And it's almost from the door that this type of behavior is offered, and then those that prove to be rebellious are allowed to be gang raped. And like I said, I don't want to get graphic, I don't want to turn anybody's stomach, but let's just keep it real. And how they emasculate men by making the physical weaker of them become women. And a lot of people think, well, you know, they're just being bullied, they're just being picked on. But as well as they can come out in full force and try to corral the streets, certainly they can control a population of prisoners if they chose to do so. And these sex crimes nor sex acts would not take place if it was not allowed. And
yes,
so
ma'am.
What I'm saying to you is that once a man who is just, he might be trying to do his time and still be a man. Once he is violated in that way, excuse me, I cannot imagine the impact on the psyche, on the self-esteem, on how he views himself when he looks in the mirror, if he even survives that.
Yes,
you know,
I wanted to chime in right there, and
yeah.
And I wanted to say this part about what you're alluding to, is that rape, no matter where it is, if it's in, you know, Comstock Prison, or if it's in the streets of Bengal, or if it's in the Congo, rape is a means of social control. You notice that in these war ravaged countries in Africa, you hear tens of thousands of women are raped, gang raped, and it's a mindset of social control. So let's make sure that we, as you say, be politically correct, but let's be accurate. Rape is not sex. Rape is violence. Violence in a particular way, violence taking you down to your essence. And as you said, most people don't want to survive that. That's something you don't want to survive, because if you've been raped, you are never, ever the same. They are removing a portion of your spirit violently. And in the past, we've spoken about this thing ripping the brain into two portions where, for example, if you're in any type of controlled environment and someone rapes you in that controlled environment, you know that someone, if you're a little child, there's supposed to be an adult there who is set to make sure that that doesn't happen. But in many cases, when a child is raped, it's by an adult. So now the child's brain is split in two. So things that are not supposed to happen happen, and things that are supposed to happen don't happen. So that brain, that child's brain or that man's brain in prison is never ever the same because two things are present at the same time. Something is happening that's not supposed to happen, and something that's supposed to happen is not happening. So there's no protection. And most men that I know when I was growing up and we always said that we ought to go to jail, we will fight to the death. And in many cases, it's not for sex because there's men, or I can't even call them men, there are persons in prison who are there just for sex. They go to prison just to have sex with men. So they, if you're a homosexual man, you can find sex without rape. Rape is a matter of social control, and it's used in the prison just for that reason. It doesn't go down where somebody is raped without a warden or a correction officer giving the okay for that to happen. It's a social control.
Right.
So I just
That's
wanted
right.
to make that plain, sister. It's a means of social control and keeping order inside of that prison or inside of the Congo. It's a social control, and it's a means of ripping the victim's brain in two. So now they're never ever the same. They're living, but they're also dead.
Yes, sir. And you know, I'm Brother Rakim, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I'm here.
Okay, because I know the sun is down. I know you might be eating. So before
no,
I move
ma'am,
on to the next
know,
comment, go ahead
I
and
forgot.
Give me your comment about that.
I'm going to tell you something, sister. I forgot all about the food. I just got into and, you know, I listen to you and Brother Jason. It just amazes me so much. Oh, praise due to Lord. It just amazes me. I forgot I was hungry for a minute, but damn, I got to get this food like ASAP. oh, man. But what was the question again, Sister Gidget? I just got thrown off track.
No, we were just talking about, you know, rape and just sexuality in prison, period.
I'm going to tell you something, then.
Sexual activity,
this,
I'm sorry.
You look at this society. You look at the number one faggot, and I got to say the word because I want black men out there that are fagging and sleeping around with other men to know that this is unacceptable. If this is an ugly word, you got to understand and put it in your mind that this is an ugly act that you're performing with another man. So if this is an ugly word, damn it, stop the ugly act. And then you won't hear the ugly word. But I will say this, that this country was founded by this country's forefather was founded by faggots and wigs and skirts and all that kind of stuff. They did a whole lot of things that they never did put in the history book, the textbooks about how they raped the little black men along the little black boys and men along when they raped the women. I mean, we live in a society that's trying to make us or force us or try to impose homosexuality on us. So therefore, they try to make it like the civil rights movement is synonymous to the gay rights movement. I mean, we in a country that don't give a damn about God. They don't care about morals or values or nothing like that. So therefore, they want us to accept homosexuality. So therefore, when a black man goes to prison, and he gets raped in prison, and he becomes, some of them come out homosexuals. And then you got others, they go in and they get raped. I worked in the prison system where they got raped, and when they come out on the street, they too ashamed to tell anybody. They can't. They ain't got nobody to talk to. They can't
right.
talk to nobody on the inside. They can't talk to nobody on the damn outside. So they're victims, but there are victims of homosexuality. There, you see people out there fagging around, but they have a story to tell that they would not tell nobody. You got these undercover brothers. They got stories to tell that they're afraid to tell anybody. And they would not even tell the woman that they sleep on the same pillow with. But then that woman would find out sooner or later, once she go to a clinic, that I got AIDS or I got HIV. What the hell is going on? Well, that's because your man, he wasn't honest with you because he had nobody to talk to. He went to prison. Prison did not rehabilitate him. Prison made him a faggot. And so white men or white society feel like as long as black men are turning into faggots, their lifestyle is more acceptable. So they're trying to make us accept this. So they're not concerned about black men or any man being turned out in prison because, damn it, they want all of us to be like them. They want to take us straight to hell with them.
Right, but it's also to conquer their own fear of the power of an educated or rehabilitated black man. You have to understand that even the laws that they are supposed to uphold are disregarded. And when you think about the establishment of law, especially in the U.S., the establishment of law basically is supposed to come out of the Bible. But you know that they will beat you, they will hang you, they will kill you, and they will rape you all in the name of Jesus. So, you know, there's a misguidance and an upholding of sin and evil that dwells within our judicial system and our penal system.
Well, why do you think they call it a penal system, Sister Gizzy?
Penis.
I'm not going to answer that, Brother Jason, but I know you will. Go ahead.
Well, that is exactly what it is. It's a penal
system. The penis system.
Yeah. I don't know where you live, but here in New York, there have been several cases that even before the brother has been brought to prison, he's been raped by the police. There was a famous case here in New York where they were Brooklyn cab drivers. These are brothers that they call them dollar cab drivers. It's very famous in and among the Caribbean population that you get this, what they call a dollar cab. And it's just brothers that take an old car and they put it out on the street and they take a particular run, say like the downtown Brooklyn area, say from the ghetto to the shopping area. And they would charge a dollar, people get in their cab, and they take them. Now, it was a set of police officers that preyed on these dollar cab drivers and they would rape them. And these dollar cab drivers would try to complain that it was a police officer raping another man. And it would go on and tell, there was a reporter, man, I can't call his name right now, but it was a reporter who exposed this whole thing inside of the New York City Police Department. And even after that, you had the famous case of the brother by the name of Abner Louima, who was taken inside a police precinct and raped with a plunger hand.
I remember that. It was some I remember that.
Right.
I remember that.
After that, there was a Latino brother that was raped with a nightstick by police officers. So what I'm saying is we have to make sure that we understand from the root of this system, and the root of this system is steeped in mysticism. I'm going to say it again. When you go into the court system here in the United States, it's rooted in ancient mysticism. Why do you have to stand up when the judge comes in? Why, if you're a defendant, do you have to put your hands behind your back, covering your buttocks, before you get sentenced? Why all of these things, as Brother Rakim said, in the early days, did the judge have on a robe and a wig? What did all of these things point to? It was ancient mysticism that was used to trap the mind of the defendant. So even though you can be convicted of a crime, if your mind is strong enough, you can be incarcerated yet free. I'm going to say that again. If you're convicted of a crime, you can be incarcerated and free if they don't break you. And the whole idea from the time that we were brought here is to break the big black buck, break the slave. When they brought us on the auction block, they would have us standing there naked, and our manhood would be there protruding, and it would make the Caucasian slavers, it would make them embarrassed because they knew that they could not match the manhood of the black man. So what would they do? They set out through their secret society. find a way to make a slave a slave. We heard of Willie Lynch, and part of it was breaking the slave to the point where he could still bring you money from his labor, but his mind was always captive. And those of us in regular society that show the least bit of initiative, those of us who show that we're not going to be held down to a 9-to-5 job so we come up with some creative ways to make our own money, they lock us up. And before they lock us up, they emasculate us. They drag us out of our homes. Sometimes they try to come at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, hoping that we're in the bed with our wives, and hopefully we're naked, so they can drag us in the front of our neighbors, naked, screaming, into the police car as they're beating the hell out of us, drag us to the jail, throw us in the bullpen, make us fight for food and bread that they throw on the floor, bring us into the courtroom, stand us up in front of these Muslim sons, and I'm saying it nicely, these masons and shriners who know the secret handshakes, and they have to be initiated, and much of the initiation that they go through is steeped around the buttocks. Many of the things that they have to do, that's why they keep it a secret, has got to do with emasculating them and splitting their brain into two portions where they can be somebody that is breaking the law while they're upholding the law. All of these things are signs of how you keep social control, and that's why they call it a penal system.
Ooh, break it down, Brother Jason. Brother Rakim, you got anything to say behind that?
No, ma'am. You know what I'm about to do? Take a wild guess.
Okay, Brother Rakim, just put your phone on mute. We don't want to hear you smacking and chewing while we're on the radio, please. But you know what? What I have a problem with is how, Brother Jason, and I'm going to move out of the penal system, and we're going to go to church. Not
yes,
church,
ma'am.
Church. We're going to go to church. Because this is what I want to know. I want to know, how can any Baptist minister, rabbi, can y'all hear me?
Yes, ma'am, I hear you fine.
Okay, I'm sorry. How can any Baptist minister or rabbi or priest or whatever get up in the pulpit, teach from the Bible, and condone and accept homosexuality? Now, I want to make it clear, because I don't want to hear this again. I don't want nobody fronting me, because you know I'm not the sister to be fronted on. I am not homophobic. I don't have anything against people who may have chosen this way of life. I judge my friends, my family, by the content of their character. Your preference is your business. That's not my position. But it is my position to be righteous as I can be. So I'm not saying anything that the law of God that has already been established before I was here and anybody else was here, I'm not saying anything against that. That's what I'm upholding. So I don't want nobody to get it twisted. Don't be talking about Sister Gidja homophobic and I got something against homosexuals because you're lying. That's not my position. But my position is to be on the right hand of God. And I want to know from Brother Jason and Brother Rakim, you can stop chewing long enough, how is it that we as a people, and I'm talking about black people in particular and the world in general, get up in the pulpit and tell the congregations that, you know, it's okay for you to be a homosexual. It's okay for me to be a homosexual and study and teach from the Bible that clearly does not permit this. I don't understand that, Brother Jason. What's going on with that?
Yes, ma'am, Sister Gidget. I'm glad that you prefaced that by saying that we're not homophobic. And a lot of times you find this. Sometimes the biggest preachers against homosexuality, you find them, they're homos themselves. And I just wanted to put that out there to let you know that we see you. And we understand that you, some of these big churches, you will find them in the Bible Belt, and you'll find them all over, where the preacher is just as soft as a piece of wet cotton, and he's talking and rallying against homosexuality while he's condoning it inside of these little secret meetings that they have and things like that. Of that nature. I just wanted to put that out there. And I'm glad that you said that the Nation of Islam, our position is that we love the brother or sister, but we hate as God hates the lifestyle. That's plain.
Right.
We are challenged to go out and find out people where they are, and we are challenged not only to find out people where they are, but we're also challenged to support our people, and not only support them, we're challenged to defend them in the lifestyle that they have chosen. We got to find a way to defend them in their ill until we can make them better, bringing them to the Lamb of God. That's my job. I'm not supposed to judge anyone. My job is to love my people more than they can hate themselves. And if you're living in that type of lifestyle, whether you be in the church, in the synagogue, or even in the mosque, if you live in that type of lifestyle, it's up to you, and it's important for you to take a good assessment of yourself. And before there was ever such a thing as religion and God lived in amongst himself, you got to understand that it would have been no way for the God to reproduce himself as a homosexual. So just on a scientific level alone, you cannot reproduce through homosexuality. I know they're in the laboratories trying to do it right now, and I've heard the studies and I've read the studies myself. But what I'm saying is through natural procreation, there's no way that society will live on practicing homosexuality. So let's take it out of the realm of the Bible or the Holy Quran for 1 second, and let's just use reason for a second. And think about that lifestyle. Brother, you could be as fabulous as you want to be. You can have streamers in your hair and still have a woman in your bed. You can be fabulous. There's people that are that way. They're entertainers, and I don't know and I don't understand their lifestyle, but they are not homosexuals. They just live that fabulous lifestyle. Y'all could do that. But find a woman and reproduce yourself. Now, to the church, sister, I just wanted to put that out there so don't think that we're coming for the homosexuals and the gays and in an inordinate way, because the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad is teaching us to love and defend our people no matter how we think that they are absolutely inordinate. We have to learn to defend our people. And I just wanted to say that you're not a homo because you're a homo. You're a homo because you was made a homo. And in a lot of instances, brother, you got that way because you have been so infused with femininity in and around, no real idea of what masculine behavior is like. You get an inordinate look at masculinity. You get an inordinate look at femininity. And in a lot of cases, I see these young homosexual brothers around, in a lot of cases, the brother put it in his mind, if you can't beat him, join him. If you can't figure out how to get with a woman, you might as well act like one. And many of them do it for the attention. I'll leave it at that. Let's get to the church. The brothers that are in the church that are homosexual, in many instances and many times, in my observation, being in and around them, you can see that they are lost souls. You can see that they know that the lifestyle that they are living is not conducive to happiness. Therefore, they had to put the word to cover it, gay. Gay used to mean happy. Now gay means homosexual. It used to mean happy. And you can see in the eyes and the thinking and some of the talk that comes out of the mouths of these individuals that gay ain't happy. Gay is confused.
Right, and Brother Jackson, but this is what I want to touch on that, because, see, I believe that when you're in a position of leadership, there comes a responsibility. And so when you're given a position, Brother Jason, you know, when you're talking about you're representing God.
Right.
And when you're talking about you're representing the Word of God, That's a responsibility, because you are speaking to a group of people, whether it's 3 people or 3,000 people, you're speaking to a group of people. But now, I got a problem with how dare you. How dare you try to turn the word of God to curtail your own need? You know, you are homosexual, so now you finna bring it out of the Bible and say, well, God loves you in regardless of your sins, and he forgive you over and over again, so it's okay for you to be a homosexual. And this is what they being taught. And then they go to the Catholic Church, and you got the father or priest or whatever they call him, bending the altar boys over.
Sister,
you have a responsibility.
In Christianity, that's if you want to find the epicenter of the disease, you could take it straight to the Catholic Church. And in my opinion, if you were to draw a map of the world and find all of the places that Catholicism has been throughout the ages, you will find homosexuality right after that. Because once these priests and check this out. When the Catholic Church builds a building in a place that's not Rome, they call that place a mission, a Christian mission. So you have to find out what is the mission of that mission. And one of the things was to break down the society that they're going into. And they brought in the word in word, but the deeds that they brought in was that scourge of homosexuality. And the reason, in my opinion, that they did it, and that's the reason why many of those priests had to take a vow of silence, and they had monasteries and monks, because the things that they were doing, they could not tell anybody. Matter of fact, they were supposed to not to talk about none of that stuff they were doing. But it was like a laboratory or an incubator for all of the madness of society that we see today. You could take it a letter of the law, but you find that everywhere that the Catholic Church has been, and they brought Christianity, right after that, you find homosexuality in them same places. One of the first things they do, as you said, is they have as part of their ceremony these little altar boys. And think of the word altar. Altar means what? Change. So they change the boys. Exactly. They, from the inception, they grab them when they're little men. And before they take on their secondary sexual characteristics, and they change them. They alter them into being something less than a full man. So when they come in with the gun to steal the gold from underneath their feet, there's not a man standing.
Woo, Brother Rakim.
Yes, ma'am. That's deep. It's hard to come by Brother Jason when he gets it going.
But I will even see for a lot,
right?
Right. Bring to a lot. But I will say this, Sister Gidget, one reason why you see so much of this madness going on with the homosexuality, because, like I said earlier, this country was founded by faggots. Make no mistake about it. I mean, who would concoct the idea of a man wearing a wig and a damn dress but a faggot?
What?
You got to ask yourself the question, who were the founding fathers? They were faggots. How were the, did they own slaves? Yes, they did own slaves. You know, they did write the Constitution. They did so many things in order to create their own wicked world of madness, whatever. They created their own world. So now it's okay for you to, and they always misinterpreted the Bible. I mean, make no mistake about it. They always say that Jesus came and changed this and he changed that, but we Muslims, in the Nation of Islam, we will accept you that way, but damn it, you can't remain that way. But in the church, we will accept you that way. You can come play the damn piano, you can play the guitar, you can play the organ, you can play the drums, you can play your organ behind the church. You know what I'm talking about.
You can kiss the pastor in the mouth. Yeah, I know.
You can do all that stuff inside
the
church, because we were taught by a damn enemy of God's. That's why. And
that was my point, Brother Rakim, right there. That's my point.
Yes, ma'am.
Teach on that. Teach on that.
So, due to the fact we are talked by this enemy that has no regard for the law, has no regard for human life or human morals or values, period, this comes homosexuality. Whatever God said don't do, this bastard done taught us to do. So, we bow down. I remember being a Mason. I don't even practice Masonry no more. I was a Shriner, and the Kaaba is a very, you know, a very is part of a very important ritual. But you didn't have the Kaaba; you had the behind of an individual. You kissed the behind of an individual.
Go ahead, brother.
Masons, don't get mad at me, Masons. I'm exposing your damn secrets, which expose all of homosexuality and the very root of it, and the root of it is your goddamn slave masters and your forefathers, white man, if you listening. All of this come from you, black masons. There wouldn't be a such thing as a black mason if it weren't for a black mason trying to imitate and emulate the lifestyle of a white mason who was a punk-ass faggot. Excuse my language, I had to go there. But they kissed the butt of the butt cheek of the candidates. And they call it the Kaaba. Now, you know, we go to Mecca, we kiss the Kaaba. We kiss the black stone. But no, they got you kissing the black ass if you're a black man. That's a damn shame. And you wonder why these judges and these pastors are marrying faggots is because these judges and these pastors are part of a secret society that condones this act. They had already kissed somebody's black ass, so they don't mind marrying somebody so that they can have legal permission to kiss somebody else's black ass. They don't care. It's a conspiracy. That's all it is. Just like AIDS is a conspiracy, homosexuality is a conspiracy. That's why they try to push this on our children. That's why now you can go to a little elementary school, and when my daughter was in elementary school, it was very shocking when I go to the school and I see little fifth and sixth grader boys or girls holding hands. That's a shock. But this is something that has now become acceptable in this society because the white man, the cover is coming off this bastard. It's coming off him. So he cannot hide his bestiality and his wayward ways about sex. And he wants to impose that on the black man and black woman because he knows the black woman and the black man are the real children of God, the real children of Israel, and he wants to take us straight to hell with them. So therefore, you can get married in church as a faggot, but they don't want you to know who you are. They don't want you to know God. They don't want you to know any damn thing but what they tell you and what they teach you. And that is, whatever he do is all right, buddy. Just try it once. That's his mentality. He don't give a damn about us. He don't give a damn about himself. He don't care about himself. He really don't care.
All right.
I might be getting off subject a little bit, sister. There's just so many things that we can cover about this beast and how he done taught us.
Hey, Rakim, let me ask you guys, can you guys speak on, I hear what you guys are saying, but I've heard nobody speak on why do men wear their pants around their waist, I mean, why they wear them around their butts, why they wear their pants so low. It originated in prison, and if you guys know what that is, you just said the penal code, so I think you know what that is, what that means. Can you tell the people?
That's the penis code, brother. That's a penis code. That's what it is. It's like,
and that lets them know that you're available. That's what that means, that you're available.
Yeah. I'm
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that because everybody needs to know what it means, man, because that's the going thing now. That's the fashion that I see everywhere I go. I see young men, young people wearing their pants around their waistlines, And when you ask what it means, they really don't know what it means. They just think it's thugged out.
Let me tell you something. It ain't a fashion. You can take the F away from fashion, and that'll tell you what it is.
Right.
You know, the penal system, like Brother Jason said, it does not rehabilitate you. You go in the penal system, you come out worse than you were before. You go in the penal system, you're a straight-laced brother. You don't smoke or drink, but you come out doing every damn thing under the sun.
You go some in. Hey, Rakim, I gotta disagree with you guys on that, man. Basically, prison does regroup and it kind of restructures some people's brains, because I've been to prison and I didn't go for anything like what you guys are talking about. And I've seen some of the stuff you guys are talking about. I've seen some of the things that the people do in there, and it's sad to see another man getting raped by another man. But, you know, you got to go ahead and do your time and just don't make any trouble, and that's basically what I did. But the thing is, when I came out of jail, I had a new attitude. I believed in God, so I took on some things that nobody else really took on. You got a lot of people in jail that take on Christianity. They take on Muslims. So you got a lot of people that take on a religion. They do what they got to do. I've never seen anybody basically be Catholic. I've never seen any Catholics in there, but I'm sure you get. I know you got them because I've seen some. I talked to Catholics, but they have nothing to offer them. But anyway, like I was saying, I've been in there, and basically when I came out, I was rehabilitated. And that's what you're supposed to go in there to get done. And basically, I was rehabilitated.
But you have to understand, Teresa, that they had your body. They didn't have your mind. Because your first entrance into prison is mental. You have brothers that have gone to prison and stayed in prison 20, 30, 40 years, but you can't break them because their minds have never been in prison. However, most of them that go are already imprisoned in their mind because of the psychological games that they play with them on the way to prison and once they get in there. And so if you're not strong enough to break the psychological hold and recognize the game and recognize devil when you see devil, then you are going to indeed be in prison, body, mind, and soul. That's the difference. And don't too many brothers come out like you came out.
You know what?
You just made
a great point there, because my mind wasn't in prison. It was just my body was in prison. But once I came out, like you said, you're on top of it, man. Basically, you sound like you've been there yourself. But you're right.
Oh, my God. Not yet.
Hey, I will say this. I mean, you felt what's going on in prison, man. Because basically, that's how it was. I mean, your man is not in prison if you're strong enough. They can't put your man in prison. They can't lock up your soul or anything like that. You still can be free on that as long as you're getting your education, as long as you're doing a GED, as long as you're doing your religion thing. Hey, that's cool. You can do other things not to have your prison, your man locked up. And you're absolutely right, because my man wasn't locked up. But I see a lot of guys go, and they really don't care. They come out the same way. They go in, and then they go right back again because they love it, man. I mean, it's crazy how they treat you in there, man. Basically, they treat like – let me just tell you some guys a couple things, for instance. I don't know if anybody on the farm has been to prison, but if you haven't, then listen to me right quick. It's terrible how your sleeping quarters are. Your first month or two, you'll be on a cold concrete floor with a tissue roll underneath your head as a pillow. That's based off you guys. You don't get blankets. You don't get sheets. Doesn't matter if it's cold or if it's hot. You're not going to be situated to where you're going to be able to control your climate of what's going on in jail. First of all, let me tell you guys this. It's always cold in jail, and the reason they have it so cold is basically to fight off bacteria and germs. Say somebody comes in there and they have a staph infection or they have some kind of disease, you put you in a cell with the same guy. So you might have 30 to 40 or 50 or 60 people in one cell. That's first of all. That's your first month or first week, or if you know somebody, you won't be in there that long. Like me, basically, they knew me, so, you know, I always got out quick, but it's just sad how they treat you, all right? Now, here's your eating quarters. Your eating quarters, you get three meals a day. That's all you get in prison. You get three meals a day. And one of your meals, they call it breakfast. Breakfast is basically nothing, man. You're talking about feeding a little kid, basically. That's what that's your meal. You get like one scoop of oatmeal. You might get what do you call it? One serving of cereal. You might a bologna strip, or they call it bologna. It's really some other kind of meat. They call it wolf ass in jail. That's what they call it. So you might get a hot dog. So everything is limited, man, in jail. But the taxes, the people are paying taxes for it. But I don't understand, where does the food go? Where do your sleeping quarters go? I mean, when you get your sleeping quarters, it's sad because they give you a steel bed, you got a steel toilet you got to pee on and do your number two on, and then you have a steel mattress, a steel bed that you got to put your mattress on. And your mattress is made out of cotton and some kind of material that I don't know what it is, but it's sad how they do it. And then some of the beds you got to put, they actually have cotton where you can stuff the bed with. And it's sad. You got people stuffing the bed with their outfits. You only get, hey, let me tell you this, guys. You only get one uniform in jail. That's it. That's all you're allowed is one uniform. Basically, you got to stink all the other days. Those are the days you got to go through wearing the same shirt day in and day out until they have wash day, which is on one day. That might be on a Wednesday or a Tuesday, and that's your wash day. And then they take everybody's clothes and they put them in a little bag. You got to put your clothes in a little bag, put your sheets in a little bag, because they actually wash your sheets, wash your towels once a week. So you got the same dang towel you got to use every single day. The grit and the soil in there from from the prison cell, because it's cold in there. You got people using it to play cards on, to roll dice on. So you got no activities in jail, period. I mean, those are really your own. You got chess, you got cards. You can play any kind of cards you want. You got people gambling for food. And the food they gamble, they call it commissary. So basically your commissary consists of maybe you can get about 10 sweets, you get about 6 noodles. Most places you go, you can't get a lot of stuff, man. There's nothing to drink other than Tang and Gatorade. I mean, the Gatorade, you got to mix it up yourself, and then you got that dead ass water they give you, man. It's you don't have water in jail. You got to drink straight out the faucet. It's sad how they do everything, and you only get one tan, and you get one razor, and guess what? It's not sharp because you might try to kill somebody. So they give you a dull razor to use. So now you got a dull razor. You got 3 a day. You got one uniform. So there's nothing. You got nothing in jail, brothers. And the reason they do that is because it's meant to torture you. It's meant for them to belittle you. It's sad how they do it, man. People like me, I mean, I'm a great guy. So basically when I went in like a couple times. I haven't been there regularly, but I've been in a couple times. And those couple times I've been, they treated me like royalty. They treated me like a king. Because why? Because I always, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. I'm polite, you know. So if you can do that, if you can get away with that, you can get away with doing in jail. That's all I wanted to say. I just wanted to let you see. So I want to tell you guys the mindset of a prisoner, because that was the mindset that I had, but they couldn't put my man in there.
Right, and like I said, Caesar, you know, that's fortunate that you had that mindset going in, making that determination that they're not going to break you. And brother, no, I haven't been to prison, but I was a prison minister for my 45 for 5 years, so I've been in the prison visiting, but no, sir, I haven't been to prison.
Yeah.
Let's just make that clear. Trust me.
And I worked at CO. I worked at CO, so I know what he's talking about. I worked as a correctional officer, and some of the most inhumane things that can happen to a human being, it can't happen in prison. But one thing I can say about Caesar is, no, the prisons do not rehabilitate you. Caesar, you rehabilitated yourself. I mean, that's the difference between you and these other brothers. These other brothers go in there, and it's like a crackhead or a weed head or alcoholic. These people seem to find each other, and they fellowship. They form a brotherhood, and instead of them getting away from that same mentality, they stick it to the game. They stick it to the code. And when they come out the prison, they still stick it to the code, and they end up going back into the prison because they miss all of their homies in the prison. They miss them. They miss the lifestyle. They miss the food. They miss the prison culture. Sure, that's why a lot of them end up back in there.
And it's not designed to rehabilitate. Okay, Caesar, we got a little more time. We're going to play a song, and we're going to come back, and Brother Jason gonna open up with Sodom and Gomorrah for us. So can we get a song on right quick?
Yes, ma'am. Hold on 1 second, and let me get one going for you.
As I look at my kids, I know they miss their mama. Since I got out the pen, been through so much drama. It choked my daughter up to tell me what she went through. While I was doing time, I couldn't tell you. I remember that first day walking in my home. It looked all abandoned. I felt so alone, holding my kids' hands, and they looked up at me. I had to let her go. That's how it's gotta be. Fast forward 2.5 years, my baby's here. Living good, right direction, daddy gotta steer. Economy is bad, the money's even worse. Hated my mama giving hundreds to me out of purse. Yeah, I'm mama's baby, but it drive me crazy. College graduate, yet nobody wants to pay me. My own family played me. Girl, you broke my heart, but that encouraged me to see success about to start. Yeah, I got this music touch your inner soul, and pray to be the tool that closes up the black hole. But at the same time, I gotta do my first job. Got my children not to thrive on being heartthrobs. I can't let them go, God, let them stay with me. When I hit my knees, I let them pray with me. Watch their movies with them, let them lay with me. And tell the truth on every track until that day hit me. Yes, when the Lord takes me away, I truly did my best, that's all that I can say. And pray my good deeds outweigh my shortcomings. In this real music, I hit the court running, yeah. To the Lord take me away, I truly do my best, that's all that I can say. And pray my good deeds outweigh my shortcomings. In this real music, I hit the court running. Times got better, but it's still hard. I know it's about to change, I can't fall apart. My woman's stressing out, I know I played a role by being selfish, but you helped me got a heart of gold. I learned to let my ancestors guide my right hand. When my pen move on paper, see that light, man. In the booth, I leave frost on the mic stand. One of the reasons why they call me the Iceman. Life lessons, they be hard on the king, but you gotta face them or your crown will only be a dream. My star alignment at my birth was the gift, blessed to speak to your soul, I enrich and uplift. They say your struggle's depth determines success type. If so, I find success through my struggle on the mic. Can't look in my kids' eyes and let them see this pain, so I put it on the disc for the world, entertain. Yeah, when the Lord takes me away, I truly did my best, that's all that I can say. And pray my good deeds outweigh my shortcomings. In this real music, I hit the court running. Yeah, to the Lord take me away, I truly do my best, that's all that I can say. And pray my good deeds outweigh my shortcomings. In this real music, I hit the court running. I have only one wish in this world, to leave a legacy for my boys and my girls. Make sure my life meant something more than just the money. You may see me crack a smile, but ain't nothing really funny. Why? I got 2 sticks and a stone trying to build a castle. Mephistopheles asked, is it worth the hassle? Well, I'd rather leave the truth than the lie to y'all. The first time I ever let my pen cry for y'all. Yeah. When the Lord take me away, I truly did my best, that's all that I can say. And pray my good deeds outweigh my shortcomings. In this real music, I hit the court running. Yeah. To the Lord take me away, I truly do my best, that's all that I can say. And pray my good deeds outweigh my shortcomings. In this real music, I hit the court running. Thank you.
That was Iceman, guys. The Lord take me away. Gidget, go ahead and take away, brother, sister.
All right, Brother Jason.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. I want to talk to you. Well, I want you to talk to us about Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, I remember the story of Abraham, I think, being sent to Sodom and Gomorrah to find at least one that was worth saving.
Yes, ma'am. It's in the book, Old Testament, of course, Genesis. You can find it, Genesis 18:16 through 19 and 29. And before we go into that, I just wanted to say to Brother Caesar and all of those who may be listening who have gone through the prison system that you are in good company. Don't ever think that Jesus was not a prisoner, because remember, Jesus was also taken to jail. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad went to prison. He had to go for a minute. Malcolm X, of course, met Islam in prison. You know, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., been to jail. So any of the brothers that are listening, sisters too, because, you know, part of that prison population is also sisters. Don't think that the Nation of Islam has some type of thinking against you if that's in your history, because the way that we've been taught, the way that we believe, you're in good company if you've been through that. So I just wanted to put that out there before we moved on. Genesis 18:16 through 19:29. I'm going to do this in a summary form. Three angels visited Abraham, God's handpicked founder of his chosen nation, Israel. They came disguised as men, as angels usually do, travelers along the road. Two of them went down to Sodom and Gomorrah to observe firsthand the wickedness in those cities. The other visitor, who was the Lord, again, the Lord disguised as a man, think about it, stayed behind. He revealed to Abraham that he was going to destroy the cities because of the evil ways of the people. Abraham, a special friend of God, began to bargain with God to spare the cities if there were righteous people in them. First, Abraham asked if the Lord would spare the cities if 50 righteous people lived there. The Lord said yes. Boldly, Abraham kept bargaining down until God agreed not to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, even if 10 righteous people lived there. Then the Lord departed. When the two angels arrived at Sodom that evening, Abraham's nephew Lot, you remember you remember the wise man Lot, met them in the city gate. Lot and his family lived in Sodom. He took the two men to his home and fed them. Remember, the two men are the angels. Then all of the men of the city, Sodom, surrounded Lot's house and said, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so that we can have sex with them." That's Genesis 19 and 5. By ancient custom, the visitors were under Lot's protection. Lot was so infected by the wickedness of Sodom that he offered the homosexuals his two virgin daughters instead. Furious, the mob rushed up to break down the door. The angels struck the rioters blind, leading Lot, his wife, and two daughters by the hand. The angels hurried them out of the city. The girls' fiancés would not listen and stayed behind. Lot and his family fled to a tiny village called Zoar. The Lord rained down burning sulfur on Sodom and Gomorrah, destroying the buildings, the people, and all the vegetation in the plain. And we know to this day, nothing grows at those sites of Sodom and Gomorrah. So there you go.
That's
Lot's wife, of course, disobeyed when Lot told him, said, "Listen, as we going, nobody turn around." But, of course, Lot's wife disobeyed the angels. She looked back and turned into a pillar of salt. So there's a synopsis of the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, sis.
And, you know, what about at the end of that story, Brother Jason? Because if I can recall correctly, it said something along the lines that so shall it be when the Son of Man comes.
Yes,
and so that if what happened, the fire and the brimstone that came down on Sodom and Gomorrah happened then, and then it's stated in the Bible that it's going to happen again. That teaching alone ought to be enough to let those theologians know, those that claim to be well-studied and well-versed in Scripture know that this behavior is not acceptable. Yet we find in our religious or spiritual institutions that this is being condoned, and not only is it being condoned, but now we have those who are in the pulpit that are participants. And so my problem with that, Brother Jason, is because those that go in search of truth and those that go in search of the knowledge of God are being misled. And you know, I got a problem with that. I'm not going to hide the fact that I got a problem with that. But when it comes to morality, everybody has an opinion. You know, I can tell you can read one thing, Brother Jason and Brother Rakim. Y'all can read it, and y'all can get an interpretation, and I can get another interpretation. But the one thing that does not change, and that is the word and the law of God that he established in the beginning. It doesn't change. So, Brother Jason, I'm trying to figure out where do they get the particular fortitude to get up in the church or in the synagogue or in the Roman Catholic Church and say that this behavior is acceptable to God and encourage those to participate in that behavior. And not only that, you have to understand that when they put that poison out there, and our American Constitution will stand up and say, well, you know, even though we built this on the basis of the Bible, we're going to let this go on in our penal institutions, in our churches, in our schools, or in the streets, or whatever. I don't understand that, Brother Jason. I'm just really taken aback by how there's not more of an outcry, not so much about the, you know, the population of who is homosexual, who is, but the condoning of it in those institutions. I got a problem with that. Am I the only one?
No, as you should have a problem with it, sister. You know, it says, as it was in the beginning, so shall it be in the end. Those things that we've seen, the reason why we read the scriptures is to give us an idea of what we see around us. And, you know, in that story of Sodom and Gomorrah, one of the things that you notice is that even Lot offered the homosexuals his virgin daughters. Now, you know that even in God's law, that if they were not married, they were not supposed to have these young women. But to think that Lot said that I'm going to give you an opportunity to take your sin from one area where, listen, it'll be best for you to have sex with these young women. They said, nah, we don't want that. Send us those men out. So it shows that their evil is overflowing. And you know, like I know, there are certain big money ministers that have been exposed just as recently, and they have been embarrassed, but they're still on the pulpit. They're still teaching religion. And there are people that are still going to their church to this day. So as we saw it in the old, we're seeing it today. And what we should do, whether you are a minister or you are in the church, is something that you should take on yourself to say, I refuse to participate in it, and I refuse to support leadership that supports that. And that's when it stops. That's when it stops, because they're always going to make evil fair seeming to men, and they're going to do it in a big way. Most of the time, if you go to these small churches that are basically, it looks like two sticks are holding up the entire building. If you go to places like that, you'll find God's word being upheld there. But I'm talking about these mega churches that are infested and in intertwined in the culture of America. Let's not forget, these churches are bringing in millions and millions of dollars each week, and they're making those who are in charge of those churches millionaires. And everywhere you find millionaires, if it's in the entertainment world, if it's in the sports world, if it's in the political world, it's always going to be homosexuals redirecting the money, which can be known as energy, into their own purposes. You understand? understand what I'm saying? Wherever find the people looking, wherever you find their dollars being moved, their dollars only are a representation of their work, which is a representation of their life's energy. So their money is being directed in these avenues. So if you're a young man and you want to go in the sports world, before you make it big and you attach yourself to that big money, some homosexual is going to approach you. If you're showing any type of a musical ability, there's going to be a homosexual that's going to approach you. If you're a little dancer and you're a young man that's not a homosexual and want to dance, there's a homosexual going to approach you. If you look like you're a political leader and you got some promise coming up in the world of politics, there's a homosexual going to approach you. If you're in the ministry and one day you're going to have a big money church and you're going to attract a lot of money, you're going to attract a lot of followers, there's going to be a homosexual that is going to approach you. Because they want to redirect that money, they want to redirect the energy, they want to redirect your soul to their own purposes.
Yes, sir. Brother Rakim? Brother Rakim, are you there? Okay, maybe he's still eating or something. All right, Brother Jason, we're going to move on. We're going to move on from that. So I guess at the end of it, Brother Jason, are we actually living in a time where morality, it just doesn't matter anymore?
We need to define morality. See, because here it is, all things are possible and all things are accepted in the fullness of time. We say morality today, but can you put a clear picture in your mind as what morality looks like? If you don't have a clear roadmap to morality,
mm-hmm.
if you don't have a clear sponsorship towards morality from the cradle to the grave, you're going to find yourself slipping, because evil is made fair seeming to men on so many different levels. So we look and we say, well, is there a clear picture of what morality looks like? And in these days that we're living in, all things are here at the same time. I'll give you an example. Young people are driving old cars. You got young people driving a 57 Chevy, young people driving a 63 Caddy, young people driving a 63 Chevy, young people driving a 1918 Ford. You can find young people driving a new car today. And you can also find an 87-year-old man driving a brand new Firebird. All things are here at the same time, letting us know we're in the fullness of time. You got older, let me be politically correct. You got older sisters wearing young women's fashion. And you got young women wearing old ladies' fashion. All of those things are here at the same time. It's not as though there was one set mind today. So we have to redefine morality. And all praise is due to Allah. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad has put out and re-educated us toward our restrictive law, not in a heavy-handed way. He put it in such a beautiful way that we can reimagine ourselves living with and through the law, not in some kind of way that if you don't do this, then I will do this. If you don't say this, then you will get this punishment. We're living in crime and punishment. No, we're living in the beauty and the reality of restrictions that we place on a new society that we're building to be the model of morality for the entire world. So I'm saying that to say that by putting a governor or a restrictor on yourself, it gives you the ability to live a model life so we can set a standard for morality. And then that morality, people will say, well, how come them brothers over there, they seem to be very cool, and every single one of their pants is at their waist. Every single one of them have a belt on, and those brothers are cool. How come the mindset that I was given from the time that I was born is that only cool dudes wear their pants around their ankles? But these brothers here, that I see coming through the project, not only are they dressed in a particular way, they're smiling at me. When almost every man that I see running through these projects is mean mugging all the time. But these brothers are smiling. They're articulate. They're saying something of substance, and they're pointing us to a particular place at a particular time. Maybe all the things that I learned in the streets, maybe I need to reexamine those things and take a look at what these brothers over here are offering. So it's as the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us, that don't condemn the dirty glass, set the clean glass next to it, and then let the people choose which one they like to drink from.
Yes, sir. And I want to take this time, Brother Jason, especially for you, who I know that you are a teacher of men to whatever degree that you do. And I want to give an original salute to all of the FOI for going out into our streets every Monday. I love looking at all your pictures on Facebook and seeing how you are impacting the community. That is such a beautiful, beautiful look to me. And when I think about morality, I think about how the FOI have taken it to the streets and how you all are walking, living, breathing, up close and personal examples of God. And I want to say I love you all, and I appreciate all of you so much. And I want to encourage you to just, you know, even though it might be a struggle, I encourage you to continue, because black man, we need you, and we need you out front to be the example to our young black men, or even to our lost black men. So I want to commend you, and I thank you, and I definitely salute you, MGT to FOI.
All praises due to Allah. Return the original salute, sister. But I would be remiss if I did not say a special thank you to our father, our big brother, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad.
Get back
on our post and to be present and accounted for. And any FOI that is under the sound of my voice, I would like to encourage brothers to please join us on Monday night, as our father has requested us to do. Our beloved brother and minister, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad, has requested us all to be there, all to be on point, suited and booted, and with the right spirit.
Suited and booted.
That's right, because there are elements that are going throughout our nation that, as the Honorable Minister Farrakhan Muhammad told us, thou shalt do, there are elements going throughout our nation now trying to reestablish thou shalt not do. So if you're finding elements inside of your minds, brothers, that are under the sound of my voice, that are trying to find ways to dissuade you from being out on Monday nights, you tell them to go to hell, and tell them Brother Jason said to get there quickly. Because
and you're supposed to get there too before I come get y'all.
And Rakeem said it too. Definitely.
Okay, DJ Black Caesar, do we have any questions or comments on the line before we move on?
No, ma'am, you don't.
Sister Gidget.
Okay. Yes.
I'm going to say something, sister. I do apologize for when you called my name earlier. I am tired as Hades. I misplaced my phone, had the phone on mute, and I don't know why. If it had been a snake, it would have bit me, because it was right, like, almost in my face, and I didn't even see the freaking phone.
Yes, sir. I understand. You know, you were jogging a couple of miles when I called you, like an hour before the show, and so
yes, ma'am.
I understand, you know, Brother Rakeem. It's okay.
It's
I got you. Brother Jason held it down.
That's
well,
right.
All praise is due to Allah. But King Rakeem is always on point, present, and accounted for in some way, shape, or form. Thank Allah much for
that.
All right, Joe.
There's something I
wanted
to say.
Go ahead. Yes, sir.
I wanted to say this. I wanted to read something. And we talk about the church. And this is coming from a book I recently purchased on books. And I want all black men within the sound of my voice to hear this. You got your goals in your mouth. You got your earrings on. You got your rims on your car. You got your sound, your Candy paint job and all that type of stuff, your brother Rakim, King RKM, that's me, I spend more money on books and videos than I do on clothing. Now, you might see my Facebook page and you say, this brother got a lot of clothes. Well, to be honest with you, a lot of the clothes I got, I take care of my stuff. My stuff still looks brand new, and it's probably be nearly 10 years old. I take pretty good care of my clothes, but I spend more money on videos, lectures, and books than anything. I mean, it's I own anything that will educate me quicker than I will any other type of material bull crap out there. Right now, there's a book that I'm looking at that I purchased. It's called The Book That No Pope Would Want You to Read. It's written by Tim C. Leadham and Mary Jane, and I ain't talking about marijuana. I ain't talking about who Rick James was talking about. Mary Jane Church, check this out. Her last name is Churchville. Mary Jane Churchville. You got folks smoking marijuana outside the church or inside the church, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, this page 222 of this book, The Book No Pope Wants You to Read, it's called Murder and Molestation in Hometown USA. I want to go back to this church thing. According to national news reports on November 23rd and 24th of 2010, the Reverend John Fiala, a Roman Catholic priest in Texas. What did I just say?
Roman Catholic priest in Texas.
Was arrested for offering to pay $5,000 to a hitman. What did I just say?
$5,000 to a hitman.
To kill a teenager whom he had sexually abused over an extended period. At the time of his arrest, Reverend Fiala was already out on bond for criminal charges and a lawsuit associated with his abuse of the boy, which included raping the teenager on church grounds, raping him on more than one occasion at gunpoint, and threatening to kill him if he spoke up about the crime. Now, while Fiala was a priest at Sacred Heart of Mary, where was he a priest at? Sacred Heart of who?
Mary.
Mary.
Damn shame. In Rock Spring, Texas, he began molesting the boy at the age of 16. After an extended period of abuse, the teenager broke down and told the school counselor about the abuse, and the counselor called the authorities. The boy filed suits against Fiala, the arch... Diocese, how you pronounce that, brother Jason?
Archdiocese.
San Antonio, the Archdiocese of Omaha, Nebraska, and the Society of Our Lady of the Most Holy Trinity. This is what these devils always do. They always come to you in the name of Jesus, in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, and all of this, but do they live by it? Do they really believe in this?
Ahead,
apparently they don't. They don't believe in this. And as a matter of fact, they're teaching us lies. That's why we worship. And let me tell you how they justify this. Let's good look at the image of
Christ.
That's
why they separated the books, brother. That's why they separated the books. It's all right.
Let's look at the image of Jesus. They give us this punctified, milquetoast Jesus. He seemed like a faggot. The way they interpret it. I just got to be real. You look at the moves of Jesus, you wonder, is this a homosexual? What the hell is this? Jesus was a black revolutionary messiah. He wasn't no milk, toast, watered down, weak, homogenized, punctified cracker. He was nothing
okay,
like that.
Okay, Brother Rakim.
But they try to make Jesus look like a faggot, so therefore they justify all this homosexuality and fagging around inside and outside the church and trying to make us accept this bull crap in our society today. I just wanted to say that, sister.
Okay, I just want, let me get to this before we run out of time. Okay, so Brother Jason and Brother Rakim, I'm going to put this question out there for you two, and I'm going to shut my mouth because I'm not going to say nothing because what I say is not going to come out right. So, you know how I can go, Brother Rakim. I'm not going to go there. how do you feel, or what did you think when you heard about President Barack Obama approving gay marriage? Brother Rakim, let me let you go and scream it first.
You know something, sister, I might be the wrong person to ask that question to. But
okay, well, let me let you gather your thoughts, because I want you to be politically correct, because we cracking and fagging out right now. So, Brother Jason, listen, I'm going to let you come, Brother Rakim. Let Brother Jason bring it on up to speed for us. Come on, Brother Jason.
Yes, ma'am. And this is the deal with that. If you notice, he first sent his vice president to test the waters. Now, of course, we had a barrage for the last 3 or 4 years of Barack Obama is a Muslim. Barack Obama is a Christian, African theologian Christian, a radical black Muslim. He's been called by the religious right all of these names. And so now he has to now make a stand on what it is that he really believes, and he sends his vice president, Joe Biden, out first to test the water. Right after he made the statement condoning gay marriage, he did what? He found his way to the house or the mansion in Los Angeles for a big fundraising dinner. So he said that I'm going to use money and fundraising to trump whatever it is that I believe in religiously. And that's the way the story goes in politics. As I said, the marriage of politics, religion, entertainment, you can find them right in that statement and what happened afterwards in President Barack Obama.
Woo! All right, come on, Brother Rakim.
I'm going to say one thing, sister. I'm going to make this real brief. When Barack Obama took his oath, that was an oath that you saw on television, that was an oath that you did not see, and that oath was to a secret society called Skull and Bones. Skull and Bones is full of faggots. Full effect.
Right.
Now, our dear brother, when he took the office, he had a good heart. He had good, pure intentions. But after he went in there and was around those demons, you started seeing a different brother. He started looking different, acting different. Yes, he still had a good heart, but that heart was overtaken by something very dark. And that darkness come from whatever society, secret society that he had became a part of, that is controlling him while he's in office to be the president. So, in all actuality, I don't know if he's been bent over. I don't know what the hell been going on with him. But the problem is, you can never be a righteous black person over a white country. You can never be a righteous black man over the White House, because the white people or the White House is just as foul as a dead body that you pass by on the street. Foul. So I said, let's take this right here. President Barack Obama, he's just following orders. He's following orders from a wicked deceiver who wants to deceive our people into thinking that homosexuality is okay. They want us to accept this demonic act, and they want our children to become faggots, and the children of our children become faggots. They want everybody to just love one another and accept me for who I am, whether you come home with a skirt or whether you come home with full of dirt. They want you to accept them for who they are. But I tell you, as a righteous black man and righteous black woman, we say hell no. We're not going to accept that crap. You either obey God or you get your ass out. That's the bottom line.
Okay, I think we got a comment from the audience. Brother Caesar, we got somebody on the line want to make a comment.
Yeah,
Hold on 1 second.
Sister Gidge, I told you don't ask me that question.
I know. I'm sitting up here shaking my head, hoping. Well, our inboxes have already started, so ain't no sense in me hoping for that one.
Oh, yes. I wonder what they say about your brother Rakim. But anyway,
hey,
I'm just who I am.
Hey, yeah, we got Sister Marilyn want to say something.
Sister Marilyn.
Okay.
Sister Marilyn?
Yeah, her mic is open, but she's not.
I know her phone was acting up earlier.
Maybe you need to turn your mute off, your mute button. Okay. You guys go ahead.
I think Brother Richard texted me and told me he wanted to make a comment. Is he on the line?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't see Brother Richard. Oh,
Salaam.
Okay.
Salaam, sir.
Yes, I'm sitting here enjoying the show. And I just wanted to say something to the fact of what Brother Caesar was talking about the prison system. You know, me, myself, being a brother that just came home from the prison system, just did a number of years behind the wall, you know, I mean, this system that they have designed, you know, it's not fit for the black man in general, you know, and I just want to speak to when y'all was speaking about gang rape. There's brothers that, you know, they don't condone them being raped, but however they was put in a situation when they whereas they may have been gang raped, and it's not the rape itself, but it's how you respond after the act is committed. I know some brothers that it happened to, and their manhood is never questioned with me because their manhood is still intact as far as I'm concerned, because after it was done to them, they got up and they handled their business and they never engaged in the act itself again. As far as the prison is designed to destroy the 13th Amendment states that whenever you have a felony or a felony is committed by an individual, he's no longer committed as a citizen of the United States, and he have subjected himself to servitude slavery. So all you brothers that's out there who are caught up in this revolving door of prison is designed to keep you that way, because what they're doing is making money off of you. And what happens is that you're being subjected to some of the worst mental stress that any man can undergo. So, Brother Caesar, I agree with you that it's some of the worst conditions. My conditions was a little worse than yours because sometimes I spent, you know, 23 hours locked in to a cell. You understand what I'm saying? Without any contact to individuals, you know, and that itself is a stressful situation, brother. So I identify
yes.
with what you were speaking of.
So yes, like, sir. Yes, sir. Brother Richard, I didn't see you on the phone, man. I thought that was Sister Marilyn. I'm sorry about that.
Yes, sir. That's okay, beloved.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. Hey, you know what, brother? I didn't mention that, but you're right, man. I didn't mention that they don't let you out of your cell. So, like you said, man, it's like you're in a little tight confinement with about 40 to 50 to 60 to 70 other people. And you're not only getting it out, man, and they beat you in the same place you're sitting at. You're trying to get your man together, and you can't get it together because you got other people around you, and they're talking, they're doing whatever. They don't have any cars. What it is, you're in a holding cell. If you guys don't know, you got to go in the holding cell before you actually go in the back room, which they call prison.
What I'm speaking about, Brother Caesar, is not the holding cell. I'm speaking about the box, bro. When you're in a cell by yourself, they close the little window that they serve your food out of. You understand what I'm saying? And there's no one in there but yourself. You don't communicate with no one. You don't see
when they did stuff like that, put us in the box. They call it the box also. You're in there by yourself.
Right.
That was solitary confinement. So you
exactly.
have to really do something sad to be put in there. So I know what you're talking about, man.
Well, this is how I spent some of my time while I was away, lovey. You know what I'm saying? So it's very, this issue is very much real to me. You understand what I'm saying? You know, I just wanted to share that. You know, there's a lot of brothers that are put in this situation. You have political prisoners that have spent years in jail, and this is how they're living on a daily basis.
Yeah, I know.
You know, so prison is very much real, you know?
Yes, sir, it is, most definitely. I pray for them every night.
Yes, sir.
All right, well, thank you, Brother Richard, for sharing that with us. Okay, listen, y'all, we got about 5 more minutes. We didn't cover everything we wanted to cover, but I wanna close with this, and I'm going to try to squeeze in the schedule of the shows. But there are 2 very important points I want to make tonight. And I want to talk about the relationship of prison gay men and women in the so-called free world. Because you have men who are prison gay. You have men that are so in tune to their horizontal nature that they willingly carry out relationships with other men in prison and then come out and not want to be associated with homosexuals, and they will engage in a heterosexual relationship, of course, with a woman. However, I'm going to say this, and I don't care how it sounds. I don't care who like it or who don't like it. A down-low brother is a low-down brother, and that's all I'm going to say. But you to bend somebody over or let somebody bend you over and you go and crawl in the bed with a woman, that is one of the worst things you could ever do, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. Because I'm like this. Give me a choice if I want to sleep with you and 50 other people. Don't put me in that position. I'm not saying me, because I don't believe in premarital sex, but even we got married men and women who, you know, participate outside of the marriage in these homosexual relationships. So, you know, we want to ask that people atone and repent, because you can undo homosexuality. That's a learned behavior. And if you learn it, you can unlearn it. The second point I wanted to make is testing before marriage. And I'm going to try to hit this real quick. For those of you who didn't hear the show on Sunday, I made a point about how initially when AIDS came out, they said that AIDS could lie, or HIV could lie dormant in your immune system for 10 years before it becomes active, you know, before you begin to feel the effects of it. Okay, we already know that's no longer the case. When we are studying young men who are ages 13 to 24 that are dying, not HIV positive, dying from AIDS. How are you 13 years old dying from AIDS? And I'm not talking about how they got it from their parents, and I'm not talking about those who got it by blood transfusion. I'm talking about 13-year-old boys to 24-year-old men who have been sexually active, who contracted disease through a sex act, and they are in the ground today. So that theory that HIV lies dormant for 10 years before it becomes AIDS is not necessarily true anymore. It's being chemically enhanced. We all know that. The second thing about it is people, you know, even, I'm not going to condone premarital sex, but let's just say it's real, it's out there. Get tested before you get married. We do so many things before we get married, you know, but I never hear about people actually knowing their status before they get married. Let's say that the brother was a player, or you as a sister was a player, 10 years ago and you stopped 5 years ago and you've been, you know, celibate or whatever, or abstinent or whatever, but who's to say that you don't have that virus? So just because you're feeling well now, it doesn't mean that that's the case. Know your status. Go get tested. The earlier you get tested, the longer you will live, because there's treatment, there's medication, there are natural treatments. I hear every day how people are recovering from AIDS, and you know, the T cell counts are not as affected. So please, 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 I'm not condoning premarital sex. However you may contract it, please get tested. Know your status. And I want to encourage people about abstinence, because there's no such thing as safe sex. The only safe sex is no sex. And so that's how I'm going to conclude it tonight. Brother Jason, thank you, beloved. It's so good to have you back. I truly enjoyed you. Brother Rakim, thank you for your in and outs and your chewing and your snacking or whatever you're doing. Brother DJ Black Caesar, thank you so much for just even being here. I know you got the two pull today. You in pain, but I can't say anything, but I love you for your loyalty, your dedication.
Can I say something? Huh? I don't mean to cut you off. My cousin, that's my big cousin right there. This is the most I think I've heard him talk, and he had a tooth pulled. Ain't that something?
Yes, sir.
Little cousin.
Well, we out of time. I'm not going to be able to run down the list because it's like 1 minute after. I think we got two more minutes. So in the event that we do, I'm going to give you the show Sunday, 6:30 p.m. Central Time. That's usually our relationship show, but who knows, it could be anything. Tuesday, 8 p.m. Central Time, The Real FOI. Wednesday, DJ Caesar and Bianna Show, introducing new artists. Thursday, Nathan Gilbert. And our topic of the week on Saturday, we have the Keys out of New York with Brother Forrest, Sister LaFika, and Brother James. So, and they line to have anybody on, so they have some interesting guests lined up for the future. Again, thank you, family. Thank you, listening audience. I love you all. I leave you as I came in peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam.